Great. So now I am so super duper excited and blessed to be welcoming our first speaker, Pat from Palm Desert. And she has 50 years of sobriety. So let's welcome Pat.
Oh, you're a kick. My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, thank you, Sue, wherever you are, for the invitation to come and speak. It's got to be old to do this, you know. I'm 82. I got sober at 32 and just celebrated my 50 years just a couple of weeks ago. So someone says, how's it feel? I said, no different. Doesn't feel any different. Another day. Thank God. Another day. And here we are. So this is my husband, Luther. He's sober 51 years. He doesn't let me forget it sometimes. And I'll try not to take his inventory when I talk, but it's very hard, as some of you know. So hard. Anyway, we've been married 48 years, which our sponsor was like, I mean, people lost money, big money on us, you know. I know my sponsor said, we thought she was kidding. She said, thank God you two found each other. You're both so self-centered. I don't know anyone else that could stand either one of you. And we thought, she's so funny, you know. And then later on, we're going, boy, did she have us nailed. And we had our struggles, just like a lot of people do, growing up in sobriety, trying to have a relationship. And, oh, mama mia, you know. But sometimes people ask, what do you think of the most when you're sober? What do you value the most? Or I forget, kind of that kind of thing. And I said that I never gave up. That's what I value most. Because I'll tell you, we hit some hardships. We hit some heavy times, we together, me personally. Some we created our own misery. Some life just happened. But there were many a time where I just wanted relief. And that's what I came to know, that so much of my drinking was for relief. I couldn't face problems. I couldn't face you. I couldn't face these feelings. And if I drank enough, it just, you know, take the feelings away. And oh my God, little did I know. I like to think I was so smart. And just, you look back and you go, really? You know, you thought that was the answer to all your problems, you know? It's almost like we were talking the other night about the profound things you learn in AA, right? I remember I had a few months, I had to go to a business thing and there was drinking and I'm going, what if they ask me if I want a drink? And she'd say, say no thank you. I went, never thought of that. It was just like, wow. You know, these sponsors know everything, you know. So, you know, but it was just kind of like that kind of thing that you just kind of learned as you go. And thank God. So anyway, I was born in Chicago, second of five kids. And my father, alcoholic, and bad alcoholic. He was what they call a periodic. And when he'd drink, he'd disappear. I mean, he'd be gone for weeks at a time. There was a time, and I know these stories have been verified, my mother was peeling potatoes at a hospital for 25 cents an hour, trying to keep food on the table. She never worked and just didn't know when Dad was going to show up, if he showed up and whatnot. And he got sober for a while. And those were years I remember. I think I was four at the time he got sober. And several years later, not that many, I don't know, five, six, we don't know for sure, but he started drinking again. His business failed. Someone went bankrupt and forced him into bankruptcy. And here he is, five kids at home, you know, his business in the pot. I don't blame him. He was probably terrified. And at that time, the doctor gave him some, what am I trying to say? What's the word? Tranquilizers, and to calm down a little bit, you know. And I don't think they had, this is in the, what, 40s, 50, early 50s or something. They didn't have the experience that we do now with some of the meds that are available. Anyway, for him, it just led him back to drinking. And the whole last year or two of his life, he just threatened suicide over and over and over and over and over. My mother just begging, please, Frank, don't do it. Come home. We love you. You know, we'd come downstairs every morning. Did he do it? Did he do it? You know, it was just a thing until he did. And he was 45, five kids at home, and put a plastic bag over his head in a flea bag hotel downtown. And so, you know, I love to laugh and I love to have fun, but I'll tell you, I know this is a friggin' killer thing. My little brother died of this disease too, drunk at 44. He hit the streets at 14, 15, and he never came up. He was homeless. we did everything we could for him, but, you know, just one of those things. And now recently my little nephew overdosed and he's gone. And he was in his 40s. And so, anyway, sometimes I have a good time laughing and talking and whatnot, but I just never want to remember is why we do this. We do, because that's where it takes you. This is a path that works, and if I'll stay with it. So anyway, I started drinking when I was 14, and I just loved it. I'm a party girl, I'll tell you. I just started partying from there on, and no looking back, I'll tell you. And, you know, I'd have a few embarrassing incidents, but I would just laugh, and well, it's nothing, you know, and go on. Boy, did that change later, right? It wasn't very funny when you would wake up mortified. What did I do? Who was I with? What happened? Where's the car? What did I do? I remember going downstairs, please let it be a dream. Please let it be a dream. And I looked, the whole side of my car totally wiped out. And I'm like, no, it's true. And just, oh my God, it was on. I moved to California when I was 22, and I found Manhattan Beach, and the Beach Boys were real big then, and big parties on the sand, and everyone's drunk out of their mind all afternoon. Oh, it was the best. It was just so much fun. I can't stand it. And it was like, and I just wanted to do that for the rest of my life, you know? Like, what the hell? So, but we all know that story. So you got to work and pay the rent and do different things. So, but anyway, I continued to party and whatnot. I got engaged in 6 days after I met this guy in one of those torrid AA romances, you know, 6 days. Oh, let's get married. Oh, okay. And then he postponed it 1 week. We're supposed to go to Vegas. He postponed it 1 week at a time for 2 years until I finally said, are we ever going to get married? He goes, are you kidding? I would never marry you the way you drink. Whoa. You might as well just pick me up and threw me against a wall. To this day, I don't ever remember that kind of a shock factor. And that's, something changed. And before the party girl, now I'm just, you know, just trying to get rid of those feelings, trying to whatever. And until finally I did enough things that I embarrassed myself right out of California. Now I didn't tell anybody that. I said, I'm going home to help my mother. And my poor mother in Chicago, she has 3 kids now left at home. She's never worked a day in her life. She's struggling. And I show up on the doorstep, right? Oh, my God. She told me in sobriety if I hadn't left when I did, I only lasted not even a year, she would have had to ask me to leave, that they couldn't stand it, walking around on tiptoes for fear they'd say the wrong thing, just like with my dad. What if they say the wrong thing? What sets her off? Honey, why don't you just not drink tonight? God damn it, leave me alone, you know? And it was just on. I scared her and told her off so viciously once on the phone that she was afraid to come home from work and come in her own house. And do I ever say I'm sorry? I'm not a sorry girl. Never. Never. Do you know, when I got to AA stuff, I really gave it some heavy thought. You must have said you're sorry to somebody, for Christ's sake, you know. I couldn't think of one person, ever. Because I'm one of those, under the carpet, it's your fault. No, whatever, move, look the other way, they'll get over it. It doesn't matter. I had an ego that was just so big that I'm sorry just wouldn't allow me to go there. So anyway, I moved on to New York. And you know when you come across the part in the book and you go, oh, my God, I've done that or I've said that. And I remember looking in the book where it says, this time it'll be different. And I remember going, this time it was going to be different. Man, I was just going to never, by the way, drinking has not, as a problem, has never entered my mind up to this point. And but I was just trying to get happy and get my life together. And all I can tell you is 3 of the worst years ever in my drinking took place those next 3 years in New York. It's like, I remember when we got married, we were going through New York and on our honeymoon. And he goes, let's run around for New York for a few days. I said, no, I can't. You know, it was like, by the way, the steps promise will be a free person. I was a little shaky on those steps, so I wasn't free, trust me. And I just said, I'm afraid I'll see someone I know. And he says, don't worry, no one will recognize you in an upright position. What are you worried about? It's like, you got to be careful what you tell them, you know, they throw it right back in your face. So, but anyway, one night in the bar in New York, one guy said to me, I don't care what they say about you, I like you. Whoa. And I knew exactly what he meant. You know, I had a terrible reputation, little slut of Wall Street, and I knew what he meant. And yet I pretend, what? What are you saying? You know, and you pretend. And the very next day I got up, quit my job, and moved back to California. The next day, I'm a runner. I can't stand it. I can't. And I'm back. And for the next 2 years, I had a little bit of awakening going, maybe you shouldn't drink so much. That was about as far as it got. And then the next 2 years, you know, now come the car wrecks, the whatnot. I said, it was going to be different. No more married men. Oh, my God, that made me feel bad. No more bars. So I would go in the restaurant and just sit there all day in the restaurant. They'd ask me to move while they vacuum for dinner. You know, like, so anyway, the day came when it was a work event, and I'd been so good. Oh, my God. Do you know I didn't have one car wreck for 30 days? I thought that was like, I got it now, you know. And so anyway, I went to this party, and I had this beautiful, you know, the alcoholic thoughts. I mean, we do have brilliant thoughts. And it was like, why don't I have a drink at home and don't drink anything when I get there? Because I used to think, only two, da-da-da, don't drink gin. It never worked. Just have one at home, you know, to loosen up a little, you know, and then don't drink anything when you're there. Perfect. I thought it was brilliant, but I had no idea once I took that first drink, it would often sets up that phenomenon of craving, and I am off to the races. And I'll tell you, I drank from, I don't know, I want to say 4 in the afternoon to 4 in the morning, nonstop. And coming home, I had a passenger and hit somebody big time, shoved us both through the windshield. They're taking us to UCLA in an ambulance, and I'm screaming, turn off the effing siren. We are not dying. We are not. And I'm like, I'm not even going to look at that. I'm in an ambulance. I'm all broken up. And, no, it's going under the carpet with the rest of my shit, right? It's like. And so in ER, I wouldn't let them touch me, one of those obnoxious drunks, and the doctor took me by the hair and just said, for in a mirror. He said, for God's sakes, look at yourself. Whoa. First time. Stopped. Dead. And I went to the gal, and I begged her not to die. I said, for the first time ever that I'm aware of, it's my drinking. I'm so sorry, it's my drinking. And I'll tell you, I can just remember just being out of my mind. When I got sober, we didn't have treatment centers or anything, you know, so I was in the club. I was, I don't know, a couple days sober maybe. And I said to the gal there, some crusty old broad pouring coffee, you know, and she was a tough one. And I said, why did it have to come to this? I'm all bandaged, two black eyes, I'm a mess. Why did it have to come to this? She goes, well, obviously nothing else could get your attention. Whoa. Another profound statement that knocks you open, you know? So many things that happen. So many. But no, am I going to look at any of them? You know. So I got home the next day from the hospital. And you know, when it says self-knowledge availed us nothing, I go, well, what does that mean? You have knowledge. The knowledge is good. We need that knowledge, you know, like, and we do at some level. But I knew I couldn't drink. I didn't want to drink. I could see all those things I shoved under the carpet is coming at me. And I'm going, oh, my God, you know, like, I can't. And yet, what do you do with that? I don't have any tools. The only tool I have is alcohol. It's the only thing I know. I found out I had someone else, too. I didn't know if he was dead or alive. I don't know if they're going to come. Also, if I'm being charged, I'm going to lose my securities license. As a felon, I can't hold a license. It goes on and on and on. I was out of my friggin' mind. And as much as I had all the knowledge, what alcohol has done to me up to this point, what it's doing to me, I don't want to drink, and I have great willpower in some areas of my life, and my personal best, 2 hours. And I was dead drunk again. I just couldn't live. Talk about living your own skin. No friggin' way. So I just got rip-roaring drunk, and that's when I called Alcoholics Anonymous, screaming, you've got to help me, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I used to say I didn't know what an alcoholic was. There's a definition right there. Once I drink, I'm unable to predict what's going to happen. And so I was just And thank God, I love people. But some people go, I don't talk to drunk people. Well, I'm glad I didn't get you, whoever you are. Because I'll tell you, somebody understood exactly where I was and talked. And then, but they say stupid things. Can you not drink today? God damn it, I wouldn't be calling you if I could not drink today. I remember just, like, doing a tussle with this woman. And, but they, those are the days of 12-step calls. They sent someone over and I was passed out. I missed my 12-step call. But, you know, don't you love these fanatical ANAers? They don't give up. We stand them up. We do whatever. There they are on the phone a few hours later. Hi, we were there. Where were you? Want to go to a meeting? No. I was still covered with blood, the same old clothes, everything, whatnot. Hadn't changed. I'm a mess. Okay, well, we'll pick you up tomorrow. And why I said, okay. And this couple picked me up. Here I am, two black guys, bandages, whatnot. I tried to wear a nice outfit to impress you, of course, but I'm like a mess. And he turns around, he looks at me, he goes, oh, good, she's all beat up. They're more willing that way. You know? Who are you? Oh, my God. So that was my beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. Boy, I stayed drunk a long time, didn't I? So how much time do I have? Oh, 9 minutes. Okay. So quickly, we'll just jump through here, the loops. Because I don't want to get into his time. That would, God forbid. Anyway, so anyway, I stayed. Now I was not. I didn't plan to stay. I don't have to do some of the things you sick people have to do. I had a bad attitude. But thank God, I was afraid not to come. Because I remember when I had 4 days. 4 days? Are you friggin' kidding me? I couldn't remember. And I mean, I was walking the floor and pacing. I'm homicidal, suicidal. I swear I never slept more than 15 minutes at a time. I'm sure I did. But, you know, you're detoxing by yourself at home. You're out of your mind. And I'm not drinking. And at 30 days, guess what? I hadn't had one car wreck. You know, hadn't woke up in a strange place. Hadn't humiliated myself with some ridiculousness. They weren't. You should see it even at work. Some guy once at work said, hey, watch this. I go, what's he talking about? He said, hey, Pat. And he goes, and when I went to reach it, I went like this, and they all started laughing. And again, you know what they're laughing at. But you go, what? And you know. So things like that weren't happening, and it started. I got a sponsor just due to peer pressure, and I got the right one for me. Oh, my God, she is the one that taught me, no, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. You know, or I said, I don't even know who I am. She goes, your name's Pat. You're an alcoholic. That's all you need to know. You know, she was just like, you know, right there. She was just right there. It was just great. And so slow but sure, I started this road. But I still had so much resistance and refused to believe in a power greater than myself. I had it so confused with religion. Been there, done that. I don't get it, so I'm not going to do it. And again, the ego keeps me from asking and talking. No, you know, they'll think I'm stupid, right? So, pardon me. So anyway, it was quite a struggle. Thank God I was in a group that was so active. We had so many 12-step calls, let me tell you. I mean, several a month, middle of the night, constantly, whatnot, and I swear that's kept me in the game. Because again, in a lot of meetings, never quit. For 50 years, I've never quit going to meetings. But I think at that time, without any God and without extra tools, was not thorough on these steps. You know, I did kind of a, you know, once over lightly. It kept me until finally at 3 years sober. The anger started, all that stuff inside that the steps deal with. Well, I hadn't, so I just exploded. Told my sponsor off viciously. I hate that part of my story. And by the way, in case I forget, I was able to make amends later. She became my sponsor again and was one of the closest people I've ever had in my life. And I'm so grateful for her. But I was just kind of running amok. And then finally at 6 years, I crashed and crashed. And we lived in Tucson at the time because I knew California. Look what California did to me. I'm always blaming. I'm a blamer. Just see my inventory, my first inventory. Blame. Well, matter of fact, I said, I don't have any resentments. You know, this is the one at 6 years. And my sponsor said, for you, write the word blame down. I blame. And then start your list. Holy moly, pages and pages of everybody's fault but mine. Anyway, I went to this guy who was in my original home group, and he knew me. And, you know, Mr. A&A, the kind I make fun of, and would have nothing to do with. And, but there was something about him. He was solid AA boy, and you knew it. And I went to him, and I said, "Do you know what's wrong with me?" "What's wrong with you? You're the most selfish son of a bitch I've seen around here in a long time. You think you're better than everyone. You're da-da-da, or whatnot. You think you're a know-it-all. You're whatever. Boo, 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 boo." You know, it's when they say we stood at the turning point, I had that moment. I was out that door in my head like, I don't have to take that from any. You know what? Thank you, God. That moment goes, he's absolutely right. And begged him to help me, which he did. Help me find a power greater than myself. Not his power, my own. Help me to work through some of the things I struggled with. I finally was able to get past that ego and say, I don't get this, and I don't understand that, and I'm having trouble with this, and I was able to start to grow and whatnot. So, and then life's gone on, you know, just a lot of AA and sponsorship and working, and God, we lost all our money at one point. Oh my God, we were like poor, down to two cans of cat food. Luthoroy says it, you always make it sound like we ate the cat food. We didn't eat the cat food, but it was, friggin' we were broke. Woo! But you know what? That was right after I had my little surrender and was getting help. And I remember walking, now I'd been a trader on Wall Street, and now I'm cleaning, not cleaning houses, that would have been us. Would have been better. I'm cleaning ovens between tenants and shampooing carpets, and on the second floor, hauling that equipment up for, what was it, $250 an hour or something like that. And I sold my car, so we didn't try to make a house payment. We were going to get a divorce. That was decided. I had nothing going on in my life. I mean, nothing but crap. And I'm walking home from work. It's 105 out in Tucson. But I don't have a car, coming from this awful job. I'm sore, you know. I have no friends because, you imagine, with an attitude like mine, I didn't really attract people too well. And I'm coming home, and I remember, like, smiling. Oh, I had a 19-cent Wiener Schnitzel coupon, and I had lunch out that day. And I remember kind of smiling, going, oh, lunch out, you know. Wasn't too bad. And I remember going, who is this? Who is, like, I don't think I smiled in a lot. Who is this? What do you mean, laughing at myself? And it was all, I just get goosebumps because I just remember that line in the book, kind of take it out of context a little bit, but for me it was there, that we can be okay regardless of the circumstances. I was not happy, joyous, and free. The circumstances sucked. But I'll tell you, I was okay. And I thought, how did that happen? Well, coincidentally, I was like more than halfway through those steps. What a coincidence, right? I didn't work on myself. Matter of fact, when I said to my sponsor in the beginning, I'm working on myself, and she said, oh, quit working on yourself. Look at the mess you made already. And you're like, she said, you work on these steps, and they will change you, you know? And I love that. I still go there now. I'll tell you, practicing these principles, I mean, this getting old is hard. It's like, you know, I have a friend that says, who knew we'd have to work on acceptance so hard at this level of our lives? But it just is, you know. It's just, but I think of that. Sometimes I think, you should have seen us getting ready. Oh, my back. Oh, my God. We're like, oh, are you ready? Two of us, we were just a pair about an hour ago. And, and I was, and yet, you know what? It's that thing. I can be okay regardless of the circumstances. And I just love that. I love that thing, too. I heard a guy say it in a meeting once. What did he say? I know. I love these one-liners. Anyway, the bottom line was, make the most of what you got to work with. And I love that. I say that many times a week. Make the most of what you got to work with. You know, my health, my back, my this, or him, he's annoying me over something, or this is that, or sponsee, or, you know, it's like, I just have to keep going. Make the most of what you got to work with today, you know. Someone else said, don't you, I love participation meetings. I know that some people don't. I love them because you hear all these little pieces and whatnot. And one guy like said once, he said, all my life I've been wishing things were different. And I'm going, me too? About everything. I should have moved here instead. I should have bought that couch. If I could have had the red, I should have, all my life I've been wishing things were different. And now to make the most of what I have, what a new concept. So when my head starts off there, I go, la, 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 you know, change the channel and come back and try and make the most of what I have. Which made me think, my all-time favorite, because it made me think of this meeting, the one guy said,
gracefully, you know.
Gracefully.
Bring it in.
Fall over. Okay. But he said that thing of, I have been through so much in my life, and some of it actually happened. Whoa, that's one of my all-time favorites. Because I'll catch myself even now, and I go, what are you doing? It hasn't even happened. I mean, you should have seen this. I'm just serious, getting ready. It was such a joke. And I said, I don't know if I can do tomorrow. I don't know if I can do tomorrow. I'm just so out of, I'm tired. We've been out of town for a couple of weeks. We just got home a few days ago, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're exhausted. So it's like, I don't know if I can do tomorrow. And I found this little saying the other day. It says, you will get there, but for now, be here. This moment matters. I love that one. Thank you.
Oh, such a blessing. Thank you, Pat, so much. That was really special. All right, I'm equally excited and honored to now welcome Luther to the podium, who is also from Palm Desert, surprise, and has 51 years of sobriety. Let's welcome Luther.
Thank you, Raina. Luther, what alcoholic. Well, we could all go home now. I think she told it all. And we grew up in the same group in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember when Pat came in, and she was so scared and so afraid. And I took her under my wing. And believe me, I didn't have any ulterior motives at all at that time. We were married 3.5 years later. But she was so fragile, you know, and so those were our beginnings. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love who we are. I love what we do. We are people who lay our very souls out for other people to look at, and maybe it will happen to them what has happened to me, for instance. I remember the last drunk I was ever on. I'd drinking for 3 weeks. And I remember I was standing on my porch looking out across the courtyard in Redondo Beach. And they were bringing the body down the staircase across from me with a red blanket over it. And I remember, as drunk as I was, I remember saying, that's the best I can hope for. That's what's going to happen to me. Because I didn't know anything about you. I didn't know there was any solution to who I was and what I was. And so, you know, and then it's like a curtain fell, boom, you know. And somehow or another, I went up to Thrifty Mart to steal another bottle of wine. I was drinking Tokay wine. I started drinking Tokay wine, and I ended drinking Tokay wine. So I came full circle to it, you know. And anyway, somebody had been coming in my house, and they'd stolen my bottle. And my windows and doors were always wide open, you know. And people would come in. I had records all the way around the room, and but nothing to play them on. You know, someone had taken my record player. So... anyway, I was up in Thrifty, and I stole my bottle of wine. And the next thing I remember, I was out in a telephone booth. And a voice said to me, stay right where you are, and we'll be down to get you. And that was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can't take any credit for that call or getting here or whatever. It was, you know what? If you're new here, I hope it's your time, because it was my time. And all the king's horses and all the king's men can't change that. So, so that's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was given the right people. Bob, they weren't afraid of me. And believe me, I was scary. You know, when I was 16 years old, sitting in my senior problems class at school, my teacher looked out over the class and said, one of the 25 of you in here will go to the nut house one day as the direct result of drinking. And I remember saying, it won't be me. And I went 5 times to the nut house as a direct result of my drinking. You know, Camarillo State Hospital and I are on speaking terms. And that was an experience altogether, like, wild. It's amazing the places we put ourselves and we don't intend to. That's not who we are. We're not those people. And yet, we put this elixir in our systems, and that's what we become. And that's certainly my experience. I started out drinking, and I simply couldn't stop. I was only like 16 when it started, and it was at some party. And I found out right away that it had a power over me that I could not suppress. And I drank as long as I could, as hard as I could, until I passed out or whatever, and it came to an end. You know, and that usually meant I was locked up in jail or back in the nut house or in some other kind of trouble where I simply couldn't get to it, you know. Because I'm the kind that dies from drinking. You know, I just drink until I can't, you know, I can't function anymore. I just fall over. So I was so lucky to get those people because they freely gave to me what had been given to them. They were the most remarkable people I think I'd ever met in my whole life. And they took me in and gave to me what had freely been given to them. And I love that word freely, because you know what? It didn't cost me a dime. My sponsor said, Luther, it doesn't take much of a man, it takes all of him. And I get that today. And that's the way my life is today. It has taken all of me. I can't imagine my life without Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot, I don't even want to imagine that. You know, I love who we are, like I said earlier, and what we do. I mean, who didn't want to be, to do something good for people? And that's what I see going on here. People who are sharing these experiences back and forth, just in the hope that they'll be like me and say, oh my God, these people are like me. Because when they took me home with them, come pick me up, you know, I've been drinking for 3 weeks. They took me home with them. I passed out. I came to the next morning. I didn't know where I was. I was in a strange house, somebody else's bed, somebody else's pajamas. And I heard voices. And I got up and I went into the kitchen. And there they were, these 5 or 6 people sitting around the kitchen table. They were laughing, smoking, drinking coffee and having a good time. I sat down in a chair right there on the corner of the chair, and I listened to them, and I heard the music. I could hear, you know, and my friend Shirley was there that morning. Shirley said, one drink's too many, 1,000's not enough, and my head blew up, and I started to cry. And I cried like a child because I thought, oh my God, they're like me. See, I didn't know you existed. I was so alone when I got here. And this has given me the richest life I could ever possibly imagine. I love my life. I love my wife. You know, I'm, I couldn't believe I was so lucky when she came in. And like I said, I had no ulterior motives at all. And I don't know that getting married was an ulterior motive. You know, it's just something, it's just what happened, you know. I remember Pat's sponsor, Dottie. Pat was saying, I like him so much, he could move in with me. She lived down on the beach, you know, in Hermosa Beach. And Dottie said, if you think Luther Wood's going to move in with you, you got another thing coming, you know. So she moved in with me. And it was a kind of a letdown at some level for her, because she had that great place right on the beach. And I was living in Torrance in a big apartment house. And she's right. We are so tired. I don't know if you're getting the best of me or the worst of me today, but I'm glad to be here with you. And, you know, I love the presence in Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel it every time I'm here. I can see it in your faces. I see it in the way you look, the way you smile, the way you talk, the friendliness, the true wish for good for everybody. You know, I feel that when I come in to meetings. I go to 6 meetings a week, and then I also go to like maybe 3 or 4 noon meetings. So I get to like 9 or 10 meetings a week, and that seems to be what I need, you know, to keep me on track. So Pat says I never miss a meeting, and I don't. I got to be just completely incapacitated if I miss a meeting, and I just show up, and it has another value to it, showing up. People know that I have 51 years, coming up on 52, and there I am sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where I'm supposed to be, you know. So I love to go to meetings, and I love the meetings here in Palm Desert. I go to Fellowship Hall a lot. And I have a men's stag meeting that I go to on Tuesdays. It's a book study. And I'm not beyond studying this book, because there's a whole lot of magic within those pages. You know, if you're an alcoholic, if you're brand new, I'll tell you, that book is totally invaluable to you. And I think it was mentioned at the speaker last night. She talked about that. She said that's her family's legacy. They have a book, you know, that was from her grandfather and father and now passed down to her. And I think she has it in a glass case, you know, because it's got to be one of the original ones. So anyway, that book has all the answers in it. And more and more and more it's revealed, and more the more you read it. So, sorry, I'm having a little trouble. Trying to think back. This will happen to you. And for somebody who likes to talk like me, I'm not necessarily talking in an AA meeting, just talk. And, you know, it's difficult to put up with. Thank God Pat was so fabulous. So, but
At 25 years sober, you went through the steps again.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. If you stay around long enough, you know, a lot of magic happens. I went on with my life as best I could on my own power and so on and so forth. Until I met somebody when I was 25 years sober. It was pure magic. His name was Clint Hodges. Clint saved my life. He took me through these steps, and it was like pure magic. I had never, ever had that experience before. And at 25 years sober, it had a tremendous significance. So, and I loved him. And he loved me. He treated me like I was his son almost. We went everywhere together. We ate 5 times a week. You know, I lived, eat, and breathed Alcoholics Anonymous through people like him. And it was wonderful. Brings back a lot of memories. That was a group of people. We had a stag meeting on Thursday night in Los Angeles. It's called the West LA Men's Stag. And those guys in there were from all over the planet, including Muslims, whatever, you know, they just were from everywhere. And they were amazing people. And again, they freely gave to me what had been given to them. And my only obligation was to pass this on, to assure anyone that it works, that it really works. I think our book says that. It works, it really works. And so, sorry, I'm so out of it. Huh?
It's all good.
It's all good,
it's all
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, Pat says, maybe that's it. And maybe it is it, you know. I think, honestly, when I first started out, I said we could all go home now because Pat said it all. We got sober in the very same group. We went through the same experiences. You know, my story is almost identical to that, except nobody in my family died from alcoholism, you know. Anyway, I think that is probably it. And I want to thank you, and I hope you all have a wonderful time this weekend.